Reading 8A, through the Khyber to Landi Khanna and my first command. Captain Jackman saw me onto the Landi Khanna train at daybreak with the parting words, "Keep your head inside the carriage if you want to keep it." I was comforted to see the glint of rifle butts poking through the concrete slits of two picket posts guarding the halt. Jamrud's station master was an Afridi from the look of him, a friendly one, I hoped. Jamrud Fort's protective walls seemed far away. I glanced around the hellish place. I couldn't imagine worse. An uneasy thought flitted through my head. Could the camp at Landi Khanna, the fort where I was headed, be as desolate? A fortified township on the highest point of the Khyber Pass, guarding two major routes from Kabul and Jalalabad to Peshawar over the Afghan border, didn't sound too bad, I mused. "Tough place, the frontier," my friends had nodded, hearing of my posting. A pair of iron engines drew alongside the platform, dragging four rakes built in the 1850s. Though Jackman assured the line had been previously cleared of tribesmen and every picket along the route manned, taking no chances, I pushed my spine into the corner and settled as far from the carriage window as I could. Once we'd reached Au Masjid, the train began its laborious zigzagging up the steep gradient of the Khyber Gorge. "Woo-woo!" it whistled, rounding every bend. "Woo-woo!" it shrieked, entering every one of the 60 tunnels I counted before giving up. "Made by Welsh coal miners," my carriage companion told me. "Imported by the railways 50 years ago." The train reversed frequently into runouts where it sat, a sitting target, till the overworked engines cooled sufficiently to continue. Jumpy, I scanned the hillsides, wondering if I was a bullseye in a tribesman's rifle sights. Whitewashed calling cards splashed homesick and victorious graffiti across the hewn rock faces. One read, "Scotland Forever," another, "J. Suffolk Hill," commemorated the bloody battle fought by the Suffolk Regiment during the Third Afghan War. Every hillock, every major ridge, sported a lonely blockhouse or a picket sighted within rifle-fire range of another, and the railway. Hated fringe footprints of an occupying force in a country that did not recognize or want Britain there. As if in proof, rifle shots pinged against the train's metal body as it gathered speed for the final spurt downhill into Landi Khanna. The pass widened into a narrow plain. Snatching up my gun, I craned out of the window. 2 years of playing at soldiering, I was ready to act as one. Dropped off alone in no man's land, I stood momentarily abandoned on Landi Khanna's wooden platform, listening to the train's chuff fade into the distance on the up line as it made its way toward the Khyber Pass and into Afghanistan. Conscious of being observed, I stared back at the glint of metal protruding from the blockhouse and cement watchtowers dotting the camp's wire fence. Not one tree, not one blade of grass. God, was this the northwest frontier? "Good to see you, Rose," a voice brought me down to earth. I exchanged salutes with a smiling adjutant sent to greet me. "Charles Boucher," he introduced himself. Charles noticed me, cautiously eyeing two Gurkha soldiers standing, rifles aimed at a large water tank beyond the station. "Just Gurkha lads cooling off. You'll get used to guards. Armed escorts are obligatory beyond the perimeter fence," he said. An orderly picked up my kit under the watchful eye of heavily armed guards. We made our way on the beaten dirt track between double apron coils of barbed wire. I entered prison, my home for 2 years. It would be no picnic. I looked around. "Built by Alexander the Great, by all accounts," Charles nodded toward Barg Fort's squat mud walls inside the perimeter fencing. A bulldog on guard built to bar access to the Khyber Pass. A scattering of a dozen wooden huts stood central in an area of fenced wasteland, isolated from three rows of ridged, khaki-tented troops' quarters ranged along the camp's perimeter. Landi Kana. I made to swallow. My parched mouth was dry of spittle. It was blazing hot, and the temperature inside my wooden billet barely less so. I fell into a heat-drugged sleep, only to be shocked awake in the wee hours, thrown from my bed onto the floor. Greatly alarmed, I stumbled to the adjoining hut belonging to the senior subaltern.
"Go back to bed, Hugh. It's only an earthquake," he grunted sleepily.
It was the beginning of a lifelong friendship, lasting into our 80s. The phrase, "It's only an earthquake," became our private joke, our way to defuse tight situations of some skirmish or other, like the time we found ourselves trapped inside an abandoned hut, bullets thundering against the walls. My very first command, junior company officer in charge of half a company, my remote blockhouse clung to the Kargali Ridge, perched out of sight above Lati Koltal, a camp jokingly known as Fort Tent, and the main camp, Landi Kama, below in the plain. With no one to obey but myself, I habitually slept in to the late hour of 8, peacefully dreaming under my mosquito net. Major McSwiney's voice shot me from my cot. I sprung to attention, saluted, bent-fingered and thumb, tripped on my bootlaces, and tangled into a heap. His pencil moustache thinned, grim. His only comment, "Report to my office, Rose. 1300 hours sharp." He never put his officers down in front of the men. Standing before him in his office, ears blazing, ego withered, I shrunk into my boots, crushed by his hail of angry words. Not to say I never lazed in bed again, but he never caught me out. I primed the fort's platoon commander to crank alert on the field telephone 700 feet below the minute McSwiney set off from Landi Kana on a spot check. "Red Wolf on the prowl!" I kept a starched pair of shorts standing upright beside my cot. I'd scramble into them, pull on an iron shirt, stockings, and mirror-polished boots, buckle on my web equipment, ankle putties, and slap my topi on my head. With a loaded Webley pistol in my holster, I'd march about poking stones with my cane, looking busy, then feign surprise at seeing him approach the blockhouse. Immaculate, inspection ready, I snapped a salute at attention. "Company present and correct, sir." If McSwiney had his suspicions, he never let on. Kafir Kot, White Man's Post, the Afridi tribesmen called it. We did as well. 500 feet above and a mile west of my own blockhouse, my nearest neighbor, I visited often. I mistakenly assumed the picket was named after us pale Angrizes. But no, its name, its very site, had survived for 2,000 years. Alexander the Great built the first fortification in 300 B.C., perfectly sited to dominate the Afghan border on the Kargli Ridge. Its position couldn't be bettered. Imagination fired, I repeated its romantic name, Kafir Kot, and pictured Alexander's men swarming the ridge, armed with primitive weaponry. Though poetry escaped me, I dreamed. Isolated in my lonely perch, I could almost see Alexander's sure-footed elephants, the columns of skirted men and laden mules relentlessly marching foot by foot up the precipitous ridge, separating Afghanistan from his conquered kingdom. Dust stung my face. The wind, snow, I suffered in the heat and bitter cold they endured, the very conditions I now suffered. Nothing happened. Alone and bored, long days turned into weeks, weeks to months. To relieve the tedium, my'd helio unimportant, "All's well, anything to report" messages to my nearest neighbor, Lester Forster, in Kafir Kot above me. Pretending urgent business, we'd visit one another for no greater reason than to see another Brit. Take over, Subadar Khan. Going on inspection. And I'd scamper the 500 feet from my picket to Lester's with a couple of men. Nearing Kaffir Kot on just such a tour, a bullet whistled past, narrowly missing my head. A hail of gunfire followed. Bending low to the ground, my men and I raced for the nearest sangar and jumped behind its stone walls. Bullets pinged, thocked into the dirt. The gunfire didn't let up, keeping us pinned down for an interminable couple of hours. Evacuation was impossible without risk to my men. "Take a small detachment. Check the number of snipers, their positions, and deal with the problem," I ordered my NCO. Moving cautiously under cover up the dry nullahs, he and a couple of his Gurkhas moved stealthily out of sight while we drew the heavy sniper fire. Half an hour passed. Suddenly, silence. Shortly, I saw my detachment scrambling safely down the ridge towards our sangar. The NCO, Kul Bahadur Gurum, snapped to attention, saluted crisply, and reported, "All quiet, sir. Sniper dealt with, sir." And he emptied his haversack at my feet, rolling out a glazed-eyed, blood-besmirched head of a red-bearded Afridi. My stomach hit my throat. I just made it outside before spilling my horror onto the ground. My orders were worded very precisely after that. "Deal with" took on another meaning. We grumbled between ourselves, of course, about the heat, cold, flies, food, no women. But I look back on my time on the northwest frontier with nostalgia. There I was an important cog in a mighty wheel. Unlike the desert frog that waits for rain, it was the very ruggedness, the isolation of that arid place that gave me life.